Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hansen, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show.
Hey, what's going on? How's your day going? Today we are going to be talking about all things couples and money. So if you are having troubles with the whole money talk with your significant other, this is going to be the episode for you. I had the actually total privilege to get to sit down and interview Elle Martinez, from the founder of CoupleMoney.com. And one of the things that Elle mentioned throughout this episode is just the importance of having money conversations. So it's super important. It's a really big deal. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. But before we dive into Elle's formal introduction, I wanted to share with you a really cool money win. This money win comes from Chad in the private Facebook group, Manage Your Money Like a Boss, which you're more than welcome to join. It's a community of money nerds, and we're all just supporting each other in our journeys, wherever that is for you. Here's what Chad said. Received my bonus check last night and upped the emergency fund back to $1,000. Swagbucks has been giving out crazy video playlists lately, and I've been able to stockpile gift cards for our upcoming trip. $25 to Texas Roadhouse, $35 to Walmart, and $20 to Starbucks. Hashtag money win. Chad, you are amazing. Texas Roadhouse, side note, is one of my favorites. Those rolls, I could literally eat for days. I think they are so freaking incredible. So congrats on your survey taken skills and getting your emergency fund back up to $1,000 too. That's awesome. All right, guys. Elle Martinez is our guest today. She's the founder of CoupleMoney.com and author of Jumpstart Your Marriage and Money. Elle, her website is called Couple Money, and what she does there is she shares information about what matters most to couples, looking at spending more time on what they love and less time on the financial crap. I mean, frankly, sometimes we don't really get to get into the heat of the conversation and the meat of the conversation because we're so busy working out the little tiny logistics. So she helps you cut through the crap and get to the good stuff. Her website helps couples ask questions and find tips, tools, and services that can work out solutions that address their needs. Elle has been mentioned in or featured on sites such as Business Insider, Daily Finance, TurboTax, and Go Banking Rates, among many others. In this episode, we talk about why money conversations are so hard to start, her podcast, and what patterns she sees from interviewing over 200 people. How to approach disagreement with your SO, it's bound to happen, and how do you actually deal with that is what really differentiates successful couples from ones that are unsuccessful or ones that struggle. Why she wrote a book, how to get your finances together, and tips to increasing your income. We also go into her favorite money apps and then specifically how to structure money dates. You're going to learn all about this and so much more in this episode. Guys, I'm so excited to introduce you to my friend Elle Martinez from CoupleMoney.com. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today I'm joined by a very fun and special guest, Elle Martinez.
Yay! Hey, how are you doing, Whitney?
Oh, so good. It is so fun to finally chat with you. We've been in the same connection network for probably like 2 years now.
And I know, so, isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's weird. So I was so excited to finally chat with you and put a face to the name and a personality to the name more than anything. So I'm really excited that you're here. Thank you for taking some time.
Oh, of course. Thank you. I'm so excited.
Yeah. So one of the things that I thought was really cool about you and everything that you're doing is you are solely focusing on couples. And that is something that I don't know about your audience. I mean, obviously your audience struggles with this, but my audience does as well. And it's always this question of like, how do I have the conversation? How do I do the budget together? Do I combine money? Do I not combine money? All of these things come up. And I know we're going to dive into that today, but can you take us back a little bit to like 2009-ish when you started your blog?
Sure. So I will admit that this was something we were personally struggling with. And so at that time we were engaged and we thought we were going to be ahead of the curve. We were like, you know what? Why don't we go ahead and look at our numbers? And that was kind of the inspiration. And we talked about it. We realized we were completely different spectrums. I had the credit card debt, I had the car loan, and I had student loans. And my husband, well, fiance at that time, had a small student loan that he was going to pay off once the grace period was over. And I started realizing I need to fix this. I was great if there was a goal, a very specific goal I could save, but this whole general thing like retirement decades away, or this idea of if I can afford the payments, then I can afford it. I knew I needed to have a shift with that. And so I tried to look for different personal finance sites. And this was a little bit before 2009. And it was just, I couldn't find anything that addressed just that added layer of complications. There were some great sites teaching me about money, but conversation is how do we find something we can agree on? How do we budget so we're both happy with it? You know, in-laws dealing with that, if you're lending to family and friends, these are all like conversations that we were having, my friends were having, and I couldn't find answers to that. So fast forward, I started Couple Money because it was something we were struggling with, and I wanted couples to avoid that as much as possible because marriage can be wonderful, but finances can be so stressful when you're not on the same page. So that's been my goal, is to help couples get better with communicating about marriage and then teaching them the money basics to set them on their way, whatever their dream is.
Yeah, I think that's a really good mission, too. I can't remember the exact stat, but it was something crazy like most marriages are failing because of finances.
Yeah. I think SunTrust did a study about that. And I mean, there's always different numbers, but when they were saying, what's your number one financial stress with couples? It was money. And that is so complicated because yes, it's about the numbers. You know, if you're in debt, that's a lot of stress. But a lot of times when you have money fights, it's more than the money. Money's to a certain degree, a reflection of what we value and what we prioritize. And so if we're not having those conversations, then you're going to have those money fights in a bad sense, as in you are arguing and there's a lot of tension. And I say, you know, it's great to have discussions and disagreements, but I don't want them fighting over money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do you think that the conversation is so hard for people to have?
I think you don't know where to start. And I think part of it is our approach. For example, when we say, oh, we're going to get on a budget, a lot of times we'll say, okay, let's look at our numbers. You know, what do we have coming in? And of course, we got to take care of the bills. And it's very vague. Mm-hmm. But I've been interviewing couples who've done extraordinary things, like get out of $100,000 of debt, or they retired in their 30s, which is great. And one thing they all had in common is that there is this clarity with what they were doing. Mm. And so we're not having enough conversations with what we really want to do. I think I've personally felt it like, oh, we should be saving up for a house. Why? Well, you know, that's kind of the next stage. Well, it could be, or it could be, well, you know what? Maybe you should travel a little bit before you buy a house, or maybe buying a house is not smart for the other goals you have. And so when you're not having those conversations, you're kind of trying to do everything with your money, and then you do nothing well, if that makes sense.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think we chatted, what, 2 weeks ago maybe?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I shared with you too is my fiance and I do not combine money. We don't do that. So mm-hmm. this topic is actually very near and dear to my heart because it's something I'm going to be going through in the near future.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you and your husband to get on the same page to not – I mean, I'm sure money fights still happen, let's be real, but to not fight yes. as often, I guess.
Well, we do the side eye.
Yeah. That's,
you know,
awesome.
At a certain point in the relationship, you're like, man, I'm just going to give you side eye. It's a shortcut.
Same that energy. So awesome.
No, what I want to say, we were good in a sense that we knew things we wanted to avoid. And I think sometimes you have to start off with, what do you have in common? Mm-hmm. And for us, I would say it took us, our first year we did pretty good. We were paying down debt, but I wouldn't say we're on the same page. The only thing we agreed on is we needed to dump the debt and try to live on one income, which was an extraordinary thing we did, but not because we were thinking extraordinary. It was, I had an internship at the time and I wasn't sure how long that would last. But that was something else that made life a lot less stressful. And I think when you start making a smart decision with money. You're building a buffer, not only with your finances, but in your relationship, because you don't feel that tension. So you can be a little more free to express what's been going on. So I'd say it took us a couple years where I say we were comfortable and happy where we are. And of course, with life, things change, our goals change. So, you know, come back in the next year and see where we are.
Yeah, I love it. And I know we're going to dive into like specifics too. So I won't ruin the thunder there, but can you talk a little bit about your podcast as well?
So I started the podcast because I was sharing my journey on the blog, but I was getting some great stories from other couples. They're like, oh, this is what we do. I've been listening. I've been reading your information, but I've also been busy. So it was kind of, I wanted to share other people's stories. And the reality is we're so busy. It's great to be able to share how other couples are able to do things and we learn from each other. And I think that's a big deal. There's definitely, you know, you and I probably agree, there's certain money principles that apply, like spend less than you earn. But how do you get there? Some couples love to spend less. Some couples are great at earning more. And so that's what I do on the podcast. I interview them, see what worked, see what didn't. Because like you said, fights are real. We are real people. And it doesn't go perfectly. And how do they work through it? Because a lot of times, most couples did not start off on the same page. We had couples that wanted to get out of debt, but they had no idea how they could find the common ground. One wanted to go gung-ho, rice and beans until they paid it off. The other one's like, we got kids. I want to live a life. I want to enjoy it. So my podcast is sharing those principles, but then letting listeners take what works for them. So hopefully they hear a story that kind of chimes in. It's like, that's us. And then they can use a tip or two in their own lives.
And it's a weekly show. Is that right?
Yeah, I do it in seasons, but when I'm in season, it's weekly. So I have almost 200 episodes.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah, that flew by. It flies by. But I love listening and chatting with other people.
That is so cool. So I think I'm on episode 36 now.
What?
Yeah. I'm like a baby in the podcasting world. So to hear that, I'm like, 200? What?
No, that is great. So many people. It's hard to, you know, I've listened to your podcast. You put out a lot of quality and it takes a lot of work. So 36 is awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So let's chat about, so you interview people weekly in season. What kinds of themes, like what are those patterns that you're seeing among couples? Is there something that they're all notoriously doing well and maybe did not well in the beginning? Like, is there a theme there?
There were a couple things that stood out. So I would say like the main takeaways, because I want to make sure, offer something that people can use today is we talked about defining that why. Like, what do you want to do and why do you want to do it? And having that conversation is fantastic. And I tell people, you know, think of it like planning an epic vacation where you guys have to decide where you want to go and what you want to do. And you're thrilled with it. And you're bouncing ideas off each other. You're also trying to win. You know, I'm the person on a trip, Whitney, I have like 10 things I want to do in a city. You know, my husband's like, well, I would love to lay on the beach or go to, you know, sleep and rest. I'm like, why would you do that? But you win each other and you make compromises. And that's what I think a lot of couples should do. They focus too much on the finances, which that will come. An example is a lot of people say their goal is to get out of debt. And I said, don't let that be your goal. Let the goal be what's your life after the debt's paid off, and paying off the debt is a milestone in that direction because that's what's going to keep you motivated. A lot of the couples, I mean, when you're talking about $100,000 of debt, that's usually not going to get done in a year. I mean, there's extraordinary stories, but for most couples, this is going to be a struggle and a pattern. So to keep motivated, remind yourself what you're doing.
Oh, that's beautiful too. And I love that you mentioned earlier the process of living on one income.
Yes.
So
yes.
Why was that important to you and your husband and your family?
So like I mentioned, I didn't know, practically speaking, I was a working college student and I had a great internship and great pay, but we didn't know how long that would last. And what I realized is we gave ourselves a buffer. And so with that second income, we were able to pay down the debt faster. We paid off over $35,000 of debt. We were able to save for a house, able to put money towards travel, and then we had kids and so forth. So when you can get into that mentality that one of your incomes goes towards, of course, you know, the essentials and your other stuff, and the other goes towards your dreams and your goals, one, it's a lot easier to, you know, kind of wrap your head. But two, I think psychologically as a couple, it makes you feel like you're both contributing and you both have such an important part in your finances, no matter how big it is. And it could be a 50-50 split, could be where one of your incomes is lower than the other, but you're still contributing towards something concrete.
Beautiful. I love that. I think too, if you can train yourself to live on one income, you become mm-hmm. recession proof. You become job proof. Yes. Like all of these life crappy events that happen don't hurt you quite
ding,
as
ding,
much.
Ding, 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 that's me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Talk about that.
So I had a job that after I graduated, we moved for, you know, and I was excited about it, but it didn't turn out to be the opportunity that I wanted. I wasn't happy. And I saw the signs and I was like, you know what? This is not for me. And if we didn't have that buffer, I'm pretty sure I would have stayed there longer. Mm-hmm. But I quit. Now, when I quit, it was when the Great Recession hit.
Oh my gosh.
A few things, you know, I was like, oh, unhappy. I quit thinking, oh yeah, I've always been able to find work. I love to work and I'm a great employee. And I realized, you know what, now would be a good time for me to try it out, try self-employment, try working my own business. And I'm very grateful and thankful that my husband's supportive. He's like, we have the buffer, go for it. When else are you going to do it? Aww. You know, and it was just the two of us at that time. So it made so much more sense. So I've been able to work from home, do something I love, help people. And then when we had kids, I said, let me see if we can work this out where I can work from home. Because it's not always possible. Not every career you can work from home with two little ones. But that's worked out. And I've experimented. Some things with business worked out, some didn't. But having that buffer has been tremendous, and I definitely recommend it. And I know sometimes, especially if you live in an expensive city, mm-hmm. it can be hard to learn to live on one income. But if you can notch it down and get to that system, you're putting yourself ahead of the curve so much. Wow. So much.
What are you seeing people doing that makes it so living on one income might be more difficult? Are there financial choices? Is it mindset? Like, what's going on there?
I think it's a mix of both. I think there are certain cities and areas, San Francisco, New York, are definitely expensive to live in. But I've also talked to couples who found ways to do it. Mm. And it does take more work. But I think if you're committed to what you want to do, you'll find a way. An example is lately I've been looking up at tiny homes. I did an interview with Claudia and how she dumped like $200,000 of debt. It was like 2 years. So when you have that mindset and you say, but this is what we really want, then you'll decide, is this apartment in this particular location in the city making us happy? Or maybe we will stay here for a year or two, but we're going to bank it. We're going to get a cheaper apartment and we're going to go start our own business, or we're going to move to a different city. So I think not everyone can do it right away, but I think a good majority of people with the right mindset can come up with a process to make that happen.
So how do you approach it if I can already see one person's like, I love this apartment, this is my dream. Yes. And the other person says, I'd rather have that money to go travel or live in a tiny house or whatever the heck they choose to do. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that? What suggestions do you have to at least try to compromise or get on the same page somewhat?
We've had this similar. I like to travel. Okay. My husband's more of a stay at home. I would start having the conversations about what do you really want in the next couple of years? And it could be that they love this apartment or home for specific reasons. Mm-hmm. And it could be conveniently located. It could be by, you know, your friends and family. And those are great reasons to want to be in a location. There's nothing wrong with wanting that apartment. But maybe you can talk about, well, in the next year or two, why don't we apartment hunt for something that's more affordable but still has what you want? And then we have that buffer now that we can travel more. And it doesn't feel like this apartment is a cage keeping us in our jobs that we have to keep to pay for it. But we can still do both. Because I think most couples want to work together, but it's hard to find that initial common ground, those initial questions, because you really have to dig deep. Yeah. You really have to figure out, what is it that I like about this apartment, or, you know, or what I like about this job or so forth. And then when you have those answers, you can move forward in a direction that makes both of you happy.
How did the money conversations change once you introduced kids into your lives?
I would say I was surprised by this.
I love it already.
Well, 'cause, we're people, like, we love to ask questions. We don't feel embarrassed about asking questions. I think that was a huge help for us. We have friends of different ages and so forth. And we're like, oh my goodness, do we have to save $1 million? Or we've heard like it's $250,000 to raise each kid, not counting college. And they're like, kids can be as expensive or as cheap as you want. Like, that kept coming up. It depends on what you really value. And when we put that in there, we started thinking, oh, okay, this could work out. But I admit, we still are conservative. My husband's like, no, we'll just make sure. And if we don't need it, we can always put it towards, you know, college or something else that they could use. Our conversations more were like, what do we want for our kids? I would almost say it's pushed us to do more and experiment. Like, I've wanted to travel more now that I have two little ones. I definitely do. I want to expose them, experiences. I want to, work's changed for me. And so he's arranged work where he can work from home once a week because he wants more time with the kids. And then I've tried to arrange things with my schedule so I can volunteer more for my five-year-old and be there with her. So, yes, it's made some choices in terms of finances, but we're not – and I'm very grateful for this. We're not hurting. And I understand, like, that's not always an opportunity. But we've made that decision years before. And so you can see, like, it snowballs. When you make a decision living on one income, it can snowball to new opportunities, new options.
Well, and I love, too, just from a business entrepreneur standpoint, just the pressure that it takes off of your business of if it takes you 3-4 years to get your business off the ground, it's not like you feel so much pressure and you put all of that on the business, which is so wrong. But I love that concept, too, of live on one income, get it so you're very, very comfortable. You're living a simple life, if possible. And then all of that money, I mean, God, you can accumulate wealth so quickly. I think that's just amazing.
Yeah. And I think with an entrepreneur, you know, like some years that have been fairly steady and then I'm trying something new. And a lot of times that means you have to invest.
Yeah.
Like with equipment, with training, and you don't know if it's going to pay off or not. It's not like a 9-to-5. Yeah. So it's nice at least having that pressure because then that means I'm not focusing, okay, this has to be profitable. I can focus on this has to be good. This is going to be helping a client or helping my audience.
That is such an amazing nugget that you just shared. So I hope everybody like really internalizes that of it has to be good. It's not like it has to make money. It has to be good quality. And that is such a different pivot. And when you have those financial pressures, sometimes you can't really, you can't take that risk as much because you're just trying to get something out the door quickly. I love that. I think that's huge. Oh,
thank you. Yeah.
Let's dive into this book because this is incredible. Yay!
So jump. Look, I just came in Friday.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Thank you. I'm excited about this.
I'm so proud of you. I can only imagine how much work and tears and blood, sweat, equity, all of that stuff went into this book. So Jumpstart Your Marriage and Money, a 4-week guide to building wealth together. Okay. Why the book? You have a podcast, you've got a blog. What made you want to write the book now?
Again, it was really addressing a need. So I wanted to help out couples and I know a lot of the readers of the blog are just readers and they love that. But the hard part was that is such a vast, vast topic. You can go anywhere with that. So I just kind of waited and listened and the podcast helped me out because I was getting a lot of questions and I noticed the podcast, I was getting these takeaways and I was hearing these takeaways. I kept going, there's a lot of patterns, there's habits that really stick and they seem to work, whether it's getting out of debt or it's building wealth that I wanted to share. And I thought, wouldn't it be great for newlyweds or couples that just wanted to reboot if they had a step-by-step process? Because a lot of us are busy. We have full lives and that's a good thing. You know, we want to be with our loved ones, want to take care of work. We want to do a good job. So we don't exactly have a ton of time, but we want to do things right. So the goal of the book is giving the right process in the right order. So what we talked about, finding that goals, defining it. The first week is like, where you want to go and where are you now? And then in the second week, we talk about how do you make your money go where you want to go? Because once you have that, because a lot of times we start off with the budget. It's like, wait. First of all, you have to know your destination. What do you want to do? And what are your numbers now? And then we can make a budget that works that out. And then a lot of couples I saw that made a huge difference was automating your finances. Mm-hmm. So I go into that, like, how do you set it up that by default, your money is working for you? Because life happens. Like, I know for us, this last year has been insane with things happening. Unfortunately, we've had friends affected by work, health issues. We had a death, you know, of a dear family friend. But that reminded us this was so important to get our finances squared away. Not that money solved any of those problems per se, but we had the flexibility to take time off to see our family and as you know, and help them out when we can, whether it was financial or otherwise. And it felt good because we had planned ahead, not necessarily for these specific cases, but having that buffer. So that's important too. And then I also talk about, you know, how do you earn more money? Because the truth is sometimes we don't have that buffer at first. So how do you build it? You know, how do you save money? We are currently, like, you and I probably get emails all the time of these awesome apps, you know, and programs and things that are out there that people don't know about. So after I vetted them, you know, I'd like to recommend them. So I go over some of my favorites in the book. And then the last part is just guiding couples towards their dreams. Because, you know, my dream probably different than yours and, you know, everyone else's. So I get a lot of requests, though, for like traveling more, for people that want to buy a house, for people that want to start a family, and then also couples who want to retire early. So I give them the tips that leads them that direction. My hope is by the end of the month, they got this system in place. They're happy. And they have this routine with money dates. I'm a big fan of money dates where they can talk about money comfortably and work towards their goals.
Ooh, okay. There's so many little nuggets that I want to dive into. I'm loving it. So start with defining your goal, get on the same page, talk about where do you want life to be? Not necessarily 10 years from now, but maybe 2 years from now. So start smaller, a little bit closer to home, and then start to figure out what do those goals cost, put a number to them. And then work on increasing your income. What tips do you have there? Because that's something that I get a lot of emails about of people don't know how to increase their income. They don't see any options. So how do you approach that?
I think it can be tricky. Of course, you know, I'm a big believer. Start with what you have ready now. Mm-hmm. If you're not comfortable with negotiating for higher pay, start practicing now with the little things. And get prepared and do it before the review. Like, everyone prepares to negotiate for their salary for the review. Don't, because they already got that down. So do it beforehand. Start having that conversation so you can come in there for the review and get a raise. We live in a, I almost want to call it a side hustle economy now.
I do.
You have things like Fiverr, where you can take the skills that you're maybe using at your 9 to 5, make some money on the side. We have options like Uber, where maybe on 1 week in a month or 1 day out of a week, depending on what your schedule is, earn some money. And that money is dedicated towards whatever goal you guys are working towards. And then I would say just even freelancing in general has gotten a lot easier now with social networks, asking people, hey, this is what I'm great at. I'd love to take on a project or two and get your foot in the door. And you never know, that could lead to a full-time, you know, career in self-employment, or it could just be a very well-paying side hustle.
Yeah. And I think that's smart too, to start with what you currently have in your current networks and without trying to feel like I have to go meet a million people and hopefully sell 10 people on freelancing or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Just start where you are and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about the practicing for your negotiation? So if somebody has a review coming up maybe next month, what kinds of things should they start thinking about now that would help them negotiate a higher salary potentially?
So what I would do is documenting. Everybody has a short-term memory. Even the best managers are going to be, especially during the review, they're thinking about all the other employees or, you know, what they're doing. So you want to make sure that you highlight your accomplishments and any extra projects you take on. And if you aren't doing that already, I'm not saying do extra work for no pay, but be willing to expand in areas you want to grow in. So a lot of times a company hires you for one specific task and they expect you to do that, and that's fine. But if you're saying, you know what, I really am looking to go maybe a lateral direction, or I'm looking to go into management, see if there's an opportunity you can jump in there and actually do the job. So when you're at the review or even before the review, send an email saying, hey, I'd like to talk about this. I'm really proud of these accomplishments. You know, and you put the, I guess it's this little Southern term, but you put the bug in their ear.
That is so Southern.
And you get the, you know, you get that idea in there, and then you start having those conversations, and you want them to see you in the position you're applying for or at the pay grade you're trying to go for. You don't want to be, you know, that entry level that they hired years ago or, you know, however long it was. You want to be that manager, or you want to be the project lead. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people aren't giving themselves enough credit. And I know for me, maybe it's being female, I feel like, oh, I don't want to show off, or I don't, it's not showing off. You're doing a service. You have a gift, ability, talent, whatever you want to call it, that helps others. And it's helping your company make money. Like, don't be fooled by that. They are either saving or making money because of your skills. So why don't you get what you deserve?
Ooh, how often should we be negotiating or having this conversation?
I would say, I think you should always be reviewing and seeing what your goal is. So say if I'm doing a job and I'm not growing or anything, I don't know what you're going to be negotiating. But as you're preparing for the next position you want to have, start doing that. Start preparing for taking on those extra tasks. I'd say, you know, do it ahead of time if you can, like a couple months ahead, so you have those wins under your belts.
Yeah.
And then present it to the manager and say, hey, this is something that I've been successful with, and you've seen my work. This is what I should be getting. I mean,
that's fair.
I'm like, should be getting. I'm not saying like just direct like that, but just say, this is what I've been doing, and this is the quality of work which correlates with this pay.
Yep, totally. And so do you think you should go in there too, having a good range of what you believe you should be compensated for?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. Because a lot of times we are at our weakest when we're not prepared.
Oh, yes.
And they're managers. And so their job, of course, is they're thinking about the company, and they should. They're thinking about the company's health, and they're looking at you. So they're going to try to get a number that they think is fair, but that might not be the case. So when you arm yourself with numbers, not just like, well, you know, I have one number, but you said, I did this research, project managers doing this. It's getting X amount, mm-hmm. You know, if they're asking you for the number, I always suggest, well, let's define what we're doing here. And then we can talk about the numbers later, push it off. But yeah, I think you should be as armed as possible. Show them that you are capable and you can do the work.
I think there's a really key point to all this too. And I'm with you 100%. Mm-hmm. The thing that I start hearing more and more people say, or inherently thinking, mm-hmm. is, I'm a good employee. My managers are going to recognize that. They're going to come to me and give me those opportunities. And that, I think, is so detrimental.
It is. And I'm not saying anything bad for the manager, as in they're trying to hold you back. But right. The reality is, a lot of managers are overworked. And a lot of managers would love for you to do the work for them, because they have to talk to their supervisor. So if you can pitch... And that's what it is. It just, you know, I work in freelance. It's pitching yourself. Mm-hmm. This is what I can do. This is the pay. You've made their jobs easier to go to their superiors and say, hey, you know, Elle's been doing a great job here. She's been taking on more responsibilities in this, and she's been having some wins. I think we should give this to her, versus you give them all the work. That's a lot of pressure on them. So I think you need to also shift it as, give your manager great reasons so they can take it to accounting or whatever department makes that decision and make it a yes instead of a no.
Ooh, I think that's so key to either negotiating your salary or just freelancing or side hustling in general. It's make their life easier and make mm-hmm. it so that it's a no-brainer for them to say yes. They yes. have the information. They agree. They're like, all right, let's do this. So that covers the increase in your income piece, so you can start to get mm-hmm. to your financial goals faster. You mentioned that you have a few favorite apps that you personally like. What would maybe be like the top two?
Well, I would say Personal Capital. I use Personal Capital. I like having a snapshot of my finances. It's very easy to see where I am and see how our money's going. And then I think it's just easy also with investments, because now that's kind of been our focus. We're saving for retirement and so forth. And this is kind of an app service. It's Republic Wireless. And I say it's an app because now they're moving towards you can bring your own phone.
No way. And,
yeah, they just started that last month. They got a list of like 10 phones. It was,
oh, that's cool.
And I've been with them for years, and that's a huge bill for a lot of couples. And if you have kids, oh, that like eats up a chunk of money. So those opportunities are out there where, yes, you can still have your smartphone, because I love my smartphone. Mm-hmm. I love my Moto X. I'm not going to – I use it for work. I use it for everything. But I don't have to be paying the high prices.
Can you give everybody an overview of Republic Wireless?
So this is really cool. With Republic Wireless, they have this – they have a phone and they have an app where for you, it's the same. It's absolutely the same. You have unlimited talk, text, and Wi-Fi data, and then you get a certain amount of cell data, and it starts at like $20 a month.
So you can get a plan. Of.
Yeah, I have two. I have a work phone and a personal phone, and for the last couple of months, 6 months, it's been like $38 average.
Jeez, that's just too much money. I mean,
I know, but. But those are examples where you can save. And what they do is the technology uses Wi-Fi, because we have so many hotspots around.
True.
That it will not use a cell phone. And if it's not using the cell phone as much, those networks, then you shouldn't really be paying for that.
Right.
And so that saves money. But then some people say, well, that's not for me. But there's other options. There's also, have you heard of Ting?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So that is build your own plan. So if you're not much of a talker, you can have like 100 minutes of talk. You basically build it by bucket. If you're a texter, you put a ton of text. They have like small, extra large sizes. Cool. And if you need data, you put it in there, and you can build it the way you want it. And I did it for my mom and my sister, and like their phone is, once it between the two of them, it's like 130, okay, something like that. And that's with her discount. But with Ting, I did the estimate, and it was $65.
Holy crap.
For both of them. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And it's called what again?
Ting. T-I-N-G.
T-I-N-G. Okay. I'm going to check into that. That's really cool. And then Personal Capital. I've seen that one around. I actually haven't played around with it yet. So
yeah,
what kinds of things does it let you do?
So it basically gives you that big picture view of your net worth.
Okay.
And I think couples should be like very aware, at least once a month, review like where are you net worth wise. And then you can also go to the transaction level. And what they offer, if you want, is they have 401k advice.
Oh, cool.
Because a lot of times 401ks, you don't always get the options you like. They have like high fees. My husband, he only has certain ones. And they can advise you on, hey, these are lower cost ones that you might want to go with. Also, another one is Divvy. They do that as well. They will give you like index funds that your 401k has and tells you, hey, this is the, with your risk tolerance, what's the best allocation? And then if you need to rebalance it, they send you an automated email. But so you don't have to link your account with them.
Wow.
It's just you give them the information, they give you a suggestion, and then they just send you the email. So I know some people don't want to share all their accounts. So that's also another option. But see, like I discussed that in my book, is that there's so many ways you could save. And I'm a big believer in couples choose where they want to splurge, mm-hmm, and where they want to save. Things that are important to you, that's fine, you know, because money is just a tool. It should help you go towards your goal. And then those things that really don't matter to you, slash them as much as you can.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. And then you mentioned money dates. And I know you and I have chatted about this, and I love the concept. I think it's so cool. So how does a money date work? What do you do? What kinds of things are you doing? Paint that picture for us.
Sure. So I noticed a lot of couples, and we did this, and I figured that why are we stressing out over money? We should look at it as a way to remind us of what we're working towards, to encourage each other. And so money dates are basically that. Just like a regular date, you guys are going out or staying and doing something fun together, mm-hmm, but you're also going to review your numbers. And I say, you know, you start off with the wins. And once you have those big goals, you're talking about, okay, what did we do last month? Oh my goodness, we just saved money on cable or something. Celebrate that. And then you look into your numbers, and the big numbers are your net worth, your total, mm-hmm. you know, the debt, the assets, what's going on. And then you review the month because you want to make sure that no bills have gone higher. I've had that with cable when we had the cable bill that seemed to always be creeping up or insurance. So when you have a way to check in, that's always good. But then also you're going on trips. Every month seems to be just a little bit different. And I think that's a mistake with just doing a budget is that it doesn't address every month is different. You know, your car tire need to be replaced. You know, you thought it was going to be 3 months down the line. Sorry, it's now. So how do we adjust our budget for that? You know, you're going on a trip next month. How do you cut back? Because you know you'd rather spend more money there than now. But it's, I wouldn't call it too casual, but it is. It's a relaxed way to talk about money in a positive sense. This is something that you hopefully are excited about. You know, you have that goal, whether it's the big goal, maybe retirement or whatever, or if it's a smaller goal, like paying off a credit card debt, a credit card this year. Those are things I think couples should have those conversations. And the more often you have it, you get more comfortable. Because I think that really is key, is making money not taboo, making it part of your regular conversations and taking that sting away, because you're doing something together and it's not you fighting each other and blaming each other. It's you guys fighting the debt, working towards better ways to get there.
I love it. Do you coach couples as well? So can a couple come to you and have L kind of be the middleman? And
I have on occasion. I think what I'm doing now with the book is I'm actually going to have a course with it. So there is going to be some coaching to that. So for the first round, if anyone, you know, pre-orders it or buys it, I'm going to have myself go through it, but I always love having feedback and I always love listening to what are the questions, because what our hangups are is different from another couple. So while I don't do one-on-one right now, I do love hearing from couples and incorporating that. And if I don't put it in the course, it's usually in a podcast episode. A lot of podcast episodes come from questions that people sent in. And if they're nice enough to let me use their name, I thank them on air. But I understand it's personal. So, you know, I also do anonymous episodes. But I love to help couples out with the situations that they're dealing with. And if I don't know, I'll point them in the right direction. I know, you know, I'm not a certified financial planner. I know several who are, and I love saying, okay, this is the person for you, or, you know, chat with them to get that, or I bring them on the podcast.
Beautiful. Yeah. This is so cool. Okay. So let's start wrapping up, but do you have any like final advice for people that are trying to start the conversation, combine money as a couple, maybe talk about money for the first time in 20 years or whatever their situation might be?
And it does happen. I say start small, like never have the money talk, and please don't. I think the scariest thing when you're in a relationship is like, honey, we need to talk.
Totally.
All the bells go off. Like, what's going on? It's too much pressure. But say, hey, why don't we go out to, you know, a restaurant you like, or go to the park, picnic, something. And I'd love to talk about something we want to do in the next year or two. If you haven't talked about things in a while, start off with something in the next year or two. I think that's a small enough goal, and yet you can still have a huge impact and just ask them, you know, how are things going? I would say, you know, I'm really happy about this relationship and what we're doing here. I would love for us to have more time together. Well, what do you mean by that? You know, I feel like we're both working, and you start having those conversations. I think we should travel more. You know, you've always wanted to do this and I've wanted to do this. How about we figure out a way to get there? I think when you open it up like that, that you want to have more time together and you want to work on projects and passions that matter to you, then it's a lot easier.
Yeah. It becomes a no-brainer at that point. And then your guard comes down and you realize it's not a defensive thing. It's let's work together to get this dream life that we both have. I think that's a cool way to go. I think that really does break that tension down a lot instead of saying, can we talk?
Yeah. And that, I should say I included those in my book because it's one thing to say have the talk, but I have like sections of conversation starters because I know that having the initial conversation is hard. And then I go through like money dates for the first four or five to kind of get a rhythm. And I give guidelines because I think every couple has to find their own money date situation. Some couples like to stay in and do it after if they have kids, after the kids are asleep with a bottle of wine and, you know, just relax. And others love to like do trips and kind of plan their big, the big picture and then break it down. So I give the framework and I let couples decide for themselves what's the best action. But I know those first ones are hard. You know, it's more awkward. It's more like, I don't want to, you know, hurt feelings. So I do talk about that in the book too.
That's so cool. Okay. Yeah. So your book is all on your website, couplemoney.com. They can find your podcast, your course, your book, connecting with you, sending you an email, just having a conversation, checking out some of your articles.
Yes.
Sweet. Is there anywhere else that people should go to connect with you, maybe on a more personal level?
I always say just email me at l@couplemoney.com. And then I'm really busy on Twitter and Facebook, and it's Couple Money. I try to keep it simple. But if you have a question and you can privately send me a message, I will answer.
Love it. Yeah. Elle, thank you so much for hanging out and sharing all of this stuff.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
Yeah. It was awesome hearing how to approach this conversation that is really freaking scary for a lot of people. So I appreciate you making it enjoyable and easy to do. That's really the important piece. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you. I want people to be happy and not have money be the tension.
No, God, no. There's so many other things to worry about. Money is just not one of them that you should.
So true.
Cool. Well, thank you. And I will chat with you soon. All right. What'd you guys think? I loved this interview with Elle because the conversation about how do you approach money with another person, another party in your life can be really freaking confusing. And so I like her simplicity behind how to actually make this stuff happen. That was really cool. Guys, make sure you check out the show notes. We've got her website, her book, and even her email address all listed in there. So if you wanted to have a conversation further offline or more in person, then make sure you spark that conversation with Elle. She's an expert. She gets this stuff and she is willing to help you. So it's really cool that she's willing to give back her time and her education and her knowledge to help us become better with money with our SO, because it is really freaking hard sometimes. All right, guys, that is it for today. If you have not left a review, do that. It means the world to me. If it's 5 stars, awesome. If it's 1 star, that's kind of a bummer. But hey, I mean, it's your freedom of speech. You can tell me how you feel about the show. And I love to hear from you. So make sure that you are leaving reviews, subscribing to the podcast. And if you've gotten some value, consider sharing it. It always means the world to me. And it helps us spread a more financially literate nation and world, which is the goal here. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.